This is part one of a two-part interview with Hall of Famer Darren Flutie. Darren played for three CFL teams and won two Grey Cups.
It's go time.
Welcome everyone to Quick Kicks here on Third Down Gamble. I'm Don Charbon. Tonight, a very special guest, one of the greatest receivers in the Canadian Football League, and he is a Hall of Famer, and he is Darren Flutie.
Thank you so much. What a great introduction. Great to be here.
It's fantastic that I get a chance to talk to you. Having followed your career throughout the CFL, I'm a longtime Rough Rider fan, I'll be honest. I wish you would have played for the green and white, but it just never worked out.
almost worked out, but not quite.
Was there a contract?
No, there was a visit. I visited Saskatchewan after Edmonton, so that must have been 97 before I went to Hamilton. Didn't quite work out. I think Daly was coach at that time.
Yes, 97, yes.
Yeah, I think as a family, we wanted to work ourselves back east a little bit more because we're from the Boston area. So we gradually moved east.
Well, let's talk about that. You were obviously a New Englander, but talk about your beginnings in this world. Where were you in the family? Where was the family? All that stuff.
My parents are both from Baltimore area, but I was very young, like maybe less than a year old by the time we moved to Melbourne Beach, Florida. So I kind of think of myself growing up in Melbourne Beach, Florida. It's like home for us. We lived there for like 10, 11 years. So youth sports and all that kind of stuff started in Melbourne. I think they still name their little league fields like Flutie Fields, more after Doug than me, but it just shows that our roots were in Melbourne Beach, Florida. So that was kind of the beginning of youth sports, but then we moved up here to Natick, Massachusetts, and that's where I went to middle school and high school, and when you started playing serious sports, that's kind of the beginning of that for me.
And what was life like at home? How did you guys get along? I know there's four of you in the family. You have an older sister.
Right. I have a sister, Denise, is the oldest, my brother, Bill, and then Doug, which were pretty much 16 months apart. And then almost 4 years later came me. So I was the youngest of four. We were definitely maybe lower middle class. We struggled to get by in those days in Florida. But our family kind of centered around sports. Everyone, my sister played softball, soccer. Of course, my brothers played sports. And I was always competing with them being older. So I competed against them and their friends. And it was sports pretty much all day, all the time. That was what we centered our family around.
That's pretty cool. I'm a football fan from my very start. That's all I ever wanted to do, wanted to play. So I understand the love of it.
I think all of us, at least the boys, we played all what I call all three sports. And I know in Canada, this might not go over well, but all three sports for us were basketball, baseball, football. So year round, we were playing all these sports. But I quickly kind of leaned towards football. I think the contact, the team concept of it. I was offered a baseball contract out of high school. Again, back to the passion of football and loving football, I thought that would be the way to go because I just had so much passion for football.
When you say you were offered a contract, would that have been like a minor league contract to start your baseball career?
Yes, I believe it was after my junior year in high school. We played high school. This was here, Natick, Massachusetts. So you have your high school season, and then summer baseball was really high caliber baseball. It was American Legion at the time that we played, and I was fortunate enough to play on a very good team. We faced a lot of very good players back in those days because we went to the Legion World Series, which was in Fargo, North Dakota. Tom Glavine was pitched against us. Pete Smith, who was in the major leagues for a long time, played against Tino Martinez, Barry Bonds. That was kind of my era of playing baseball. And I enjoyed it. Baseball was fun, but you get like four at-bats a game, and maybe you get three or four balls hit to you a game, and you're not constantly involved in the game. Where football, you're always doing something. So after my junior year of high school, a scout, I actually think his name was Lenny Marullo, came to our house and offered me a contract to play baseball. I mean, I was like 16, I didn't know what it was all about.
That would have been a big decision.
Yeah. Who knows what would have happened, but I know my father wanted me to go to college, but by that time I had a scholarship offer from Boston College. So that kind of played a role, and I didn't want to, yeah, it would have been minor league baseball, right? I'm not going to go straight to the majors. I probably would have played A-ball or something, jumping in a bus, and I was still kind of a mama's boy at that time, and leaving home and being on a bus and living on my own. I don't think I was ready for that.
Boston College, how far away was that for you to go to?
15 minutes down the road. We live, Natick's about 15 minutes from Chestnut Hill, Massachusetts. You just take Route 9 right down the road and you're there. So again, I'm very close to home. So I'm in that college atmosphere, but I still have kind of mom and dad right there and my family around me. Plus Doug was a senior when I was a freshman at Boston College. So I didn't redshirt or anything my freshman year and we played together. And that was a great experience.
You had your 4 years at Boston College. You must have put up some decent numbers because the NFL did look at you.
Yeah, certainly. I really wish I had redshirted that freshman year and had time to mature a little bit because I was straight, you know, 17, 18, 19, 20. And when I did go to the NFL, I was still 20 years old because I'm a November birthday. But at Boston College, we got the opportunity to play. We were playing Alabama, Clemson, Tennessee. We played all the best teams in the countries in those days. That was like 84 to 88. And that was a big jump. Trying to play Division I college football, fresh out of Natick High School, it was tough. So I quickly learned I had to get much better. Like very quickly, I had to get much better to compete at that level. And I think that kind of kept happening, right? You played college, and then when I went to the NFL, the same thing happened.
Boston College, I believe at that time, after the big game against Miami, its notoriety sort of had climbed. So you were hitting Boston College at the right time to be noticed.
Absolutely. Doug's group of players, I mean, Doug being there and what he accomplished, but also a lot of people that played with him. Kelvin Martin was a great receiver. Gerard Phelan was a great, great college receiver. They had all sorts of offensive linemen and linebackers that went to the NFL. Steve Strahan was a running back, Troy Stratford, Kenny Bell. All those three running backs played in the NFL. So they had some great players. It was a time where BC could still get these really good football players that were maybe overlooked by other teams. Scouting in those days wasn't as precise as it is now. Right, if you want to get recruited by a Division I team these days, they have to get eyes on you and time you and get your vertical and all those sprint things. Back then, they looked at game film, they looked at stats, and they're like, yeah, we'll take that guy. So I kind of snuck my way into Boston College and tried to get a lot better.
I don't know if sneaking would be the right word because you did have a bit of a pedigree with your brother, so I'm sure there was an interest there with just the fact that you were coming along next.
Yeah, it's funny because I was actually highly recruited. And as I look back, it's kind of a joke that I was very highly recruited because, again, if they had like timed me in my 40 and done all that type of stuff, I don't think I would have been, I wouldn't be highly recruited today. That's for sure. But, you know, I visited Duke and Maryland and USC. I know I'm missing some school, but I went to a lot of good Division I schools just to see what was out there. But I think in the back of my mind, I always knew I would go to Boston College because my brother had gone there. I think he was given the last scholarship of his year. So he barely got the scholarship to go to Boston College. And he immediately got a chance. I think he traveled in his first game as a punt returner. So I knew at Boston College, you could get an opportunity to get on the field. And plus, my brother was there already, and it was a real comfortable situation. I knew the coaches very well through Doug's recruitment. It worked out very well, so I was happy with my choice.
Let's talk about the NFL. Were you drafted? Where were you drafted? And how did the Chargers factor into that?
So I was not drafted. I was undrafted. And again, it plays into kind of the things that kept happening to me in my football career. Not that it was good or bad or indifferent, but I wasn't drafted. But three or four teams called me right after the draft and said, well, we wanted to draft you. I'm sure they'd tell everyone that. But we drafted two receivers early in the rounds, and we didn't want to draft any receivers. Jerry Rome was the offensive coordinator at San Diego, and he had coached Steve Largen in Seattle as an offensive coordinator. And he kept saying, "You remind me a lot of Steve Largen, and I want you to come to San Diego. I know we drafted two receivers in the first and third round, but we'll give you the best look, and you'll get every opportunity to make the team." And then, of course, you get there, and there's like 15 receivers on the team, or at least signed, going to camp, and they're going to keep four. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, what did I get myself into? But I do remember kind of reminding myself, listen, just do the best you can, work as hard as you can. And if it doesn't work out, then I don't have to look back and regret anything. And it turned out well. I mean, I made the team that year in 88, played a full season with the Chargers, and had my first NFL touchdowns and catches and all that type of stuff.
That's pretty awesome. For a guy that was just, okay, I'm doing my best, the next thing you know, you're in the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, you end up learning, at least I ended up learning, so many lessons that would help me as I kept playing football. Just kind of telling myself to be the first one on the field and never stop running and working while you're out there. Get better every day. Catch 50 passes before practice, 50 after. I think I went that whole first camp without really dropping a football. So I was catching a lot of footballs, and I was lucky enough to get time because I think a couple of the receivers that got drafted ahead of me had injuries in training camp. So I got a lot of time with the first unit, and I was playing well. And I started to realize, wow, this hard work thing really catches on. It's making me better and better. So that was like somewhat at Boston College, but definitely when I was with the Chargers, I was realizing hard work would pay off, and it was helping me out a lot. And that continued as I kept playing.
What happened in 1989?
So in 89, I ended up getting released, and eventually I ended up with the Cardinals. So I was signed by the Phoenix Cardinals, and I was in their training camp in 90. And I had one of my best training camps with the Cardinals, and I had made the team, and they had actually drafted Ricky Prohl in the third round from Wake Forest. We became friends, but I think he got an injury also. And I was going to be one of the starting receivers with the Cardinals. In our last preseason game before the regular season, I broke my left foot in a preseason game. So I spent all of 1990 on IR, ended up not playing at all. And I came back to camp in 91. Again, I had a good camp. Maybe not my best ever, but I had a very good camp, but I got released. And at that point, I was a little soured on football and a little bit of what I thought was the politics of the NFL. And they give someone a signing bonus, they give them a bigger chance than if you're a free agent, that type of stuff, if you're drafted. So I really didn't want to play more football. But at that point, Doug was in British Columbia. And Doug was telling me, well, you know what, if you come up here to Canada and you give it a shot, I think it'll put the passion back in myself to play football. And I really didn't believe him. And at that time, actually, Terry was with me. My wife was with me. And we both went from Phoenix up to Vancouver. And I started on the practice roster for the British Columbia Lions in, what was that, 91.
Well, I guess halfway through the season, you finally make your debut.
Right. A little, because cuts are late in the NFL. So it was almost September. So I think I played the last 8 regular season games, and Doug was at quarterback, and they had a great receiving core, right? They had Ray Alexander, Matt Clark, Trevathan, and I forget who the receiver was that I replaced at that time, maybe Jay Christensen. So I got an opportunity to play, and I was put at wide out, and they were just kind of seeing how I did. But in 8 games, I think I caught like 65, 68 passes in 8 games. So I was playing well, and we had a very good team, right? That team scored a lot of points. But I heard a little bit of like, oh, well, your brother's a quarterback, and of course he's throwing you the ball, and that's why you're catching so many footballs. You're actually, this was kind of local reporters in Vancouver. Actually, he's not as good as the numbers say he is, and all that was kind of going on in 91. So after 91, Doug left and went to Calgary. Still in British Columbia. And so 92 training camp was going to be a big season for me.
And in 92, who becomes your quarterback?
Anyone and everyone, I think. Tony Kimbrough was there, Mike Johnson, Julio Caravada. There was like a rotation of quarterbacks, a lot of quarterbacks. So maybe in 92, it was Danny Barrett. I could have my facts wrong. At some point, Danny Barrett got involved. And I think Danny Barrett was playing in 93 with Danny McManus as the backup. I had maybe 80 catches or something, and I had maybe 1,200 yards in 92. And it was just an abysmal season for the Lions that year. I think we won two games, maybe. 2-16, so we were really struggling. I think Obilovich was still the head coach, Bob Obilovich. But again, having a good 1,000-yard season, so I'd come off that first kind of 8-game thing in 91, then I had a 1,000-yard season. So I'd started to realize what it took to get a little bit better. So coming back in 93 was going to be another big step for me. Still trying to prove myself at that point, basically. But again, 93, even though I started to play well, they were bringing other people in. Some NFL cuts were coming up, and they were trying to replace me. There was this whole thing about speed, not being fast enough. I continued to kind of find a formula for myself that was getting me better and better. I could feel myself gaining more confidence, but I really wasn't at the point where I would call myself an elite receiver. I had another good season with Danny Barrett and Danny Mack. And that's the first year Danny and I started to kind of create a chemistry together. I liked it when Danny came in. He would look for me a little bit more than maybe Danny did. We had a good year. We made the playoffs and we lost to Calgary, who was very good that year. I think in the semifinal, it was like a 17-10 game. But in that playoff game, I had like 13 catches. And I had a lot of confidence coming off of the 93 season. And then in 94 was the big year where Ken Austin came over and Danny stayed and backed Kent up.
That season, of course, is memorable because you go all the way to the Grey Cup and face Baltimore. And that's the first time an American franchise is ever in the Grey Cup. Before we get to that, though, the huge moment in that season, well, two of them, you go into Edmonton and you beat Edmonton with a late field goal. And that stunned everybody.
Yeah, that team had a lot of characters on it, I should say. Our defensive backs were hated throughout the league, like John Jefferson, Barry Wilburn, Les Brown, Charles Gordon. So going against those guys in practice, it was a battle. There was a fight every day in one-on-ones. But that's kind of how the season went, and that made me a lot better. Running routes against those guys, that was getting better and better. And 94 was my best year. I think 111 catches or something. Yeah, so we go into Edmonton, and that must have been the semifinal. So we played at Edmonton, so we must have finished third that year. And it was a last-second game. I think Charles Gordon had a huge interception when they were down on our 5-yard line. If they score that touchdown, the game was over. So he picks off like a little rub route in the flat and takes it back to about midfield.
Get in and make the tackle. Floyd got one. Second and goal from the 4. Soles the lone setback. Allen to Christensen. Picked off! Charles Gordon has it up across the 40-yard line. There's a flag down, but what a huge play for Gordon.
And we picked up maybe 30 yards to get within the field goal range for Lou Saglia. And with no time left on the clock, he kicks a field goal to beat Edmonton. And that was a big shock. I mean, Edmonton was favored probably by 10. So winning that semifinal and getting ourselves into the Western final against Calgary, that could have been a huge accomplishment in itself.
You knock off one defending Grey Cup champ. Now you have to go against one that had won 2 years before, the Stampeders, who had the best record in the league.
Right.
And with a minute and a half to go in that game, you've had a stellar game, but a minute and a half to go, BC has to block a field goal to at least have a chance to win in regulation.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It looked really dim. As well as we had played as a team, and I had a very good game up to that point, Ken Austin started in the first half, and I had over 100 yards in the first half, and I had a long touchdown. But we had played really well, but Calgary was so good that year. So they kept scoring. When we scored, that, you know, we might get a field goal, they got a touchdown. So we were down late, and the snow had started to come down. Now Danny had replaced Kent at quarterback. And it took a little bit to get Danny going, but when he got going, he really got hot, and he got into it, and he got a real good feel for the game. So late in the fourth quarter, I forget what we're down, but we thought there was 3 minutes left, and we thought we're going on this drive, and we either win or lose with this drive. And Danny makes this crazy, incredible play, getting out of a sack, and he flips it to Corey Philpott, and Philpott takes off for like 20, 25 yards, but he fumbles at the end. Calgary picks it up, and game over, right? Everybody thought the game, I thought the game was over when we walked off after turning that ball over. But like you said, I think they pick up one first down, and then they're thinking, all right, well, their field goal kicker, Mark
McLaughlin,
right? Yeah. And Doug's holding, and he's pretty much automatic, but the snow had really started to come down at that point. So Ray Alexander blocks that field goal, like jumping over people's back, and Ray's 6'4", 6'5", to begin with, blocks that field goal, which if they make that field goal, it's out of reach. I think they're up by 9 if they make that field goal. Maybe they're up by 8.
8.
Right, 8. Blocks that, Doug knocks it out of bounds, but then our drive starts. Jeez, Danny was just amazing. We had myself at receiver, Matt Clark, Yo Murphy, and Ray Alexander. Ray Alexander, people don't talk about him enough. He was such a great receiver. I mean, I caught an early one in that drive for maybe like 8 yards, but Matt, Yo Murphy had some big catches all along the way. But we were burning time, and we really didn't do a good job with the clock. I was kept thinking, like, why aren't we calling a timeout or throwing a ball away or spiking the ball? But it was just methodical, and Danny was very calm. Like, I see it ticking down from 40, and I'm like, we're at the 30-yard line. I'm like, and then we got down to about the 30-yard line. I think there was 15 seconds left. And Danny's calling every play at the line of scrimmage, just yelling it out. They probably knew the plays by then. But that's when he did a little, it's called a turn back protection, and then I'd run a corner backside. And it was cover two, and they had doubled me. They had, I don't know who it was, Kenton Leonard or me, but the free safety was doubling me. But I kind of got between them, and Danny just threw a perfect pass, like just over the guy underneath of me and just in front of the free safety. And I went up and caught a ball kind of around the 5-yard line, took a big hit.
Stampeders haunted by the loss in 93. This would be devastating. Can they hang on against McManus and the Lions? A dozen seconds to play. This is second down. McManus, open receiver, Flutie! And what an amazing catch! How did he hang on?
Darren Flutie, number 82, with the catch for the BC
They're
Lions.
Inside the 5 on as good a catch as
it
you'll ever see.
And goal to go for the Lions at the stand.
Catches it in between two defenders. That's Coleman and also Kenton Leonard. What a great touch pass!
And I'm still, at that point, I'm like, NFL or United States rules compared to the CFL, I'm thinking the clock's going to run and we're going to run out of time and the game's going to be over. So I'm hustling back to the huddle. And then at that point, I realized, like, oh, we still get another play no matter what. But I think we actually called the timeout. Calgary calls the timeout. So we got, 5 seconds left from the 6-yard line. And I think Kent Austin was the one that called the play. It was a 3-receiver route. To the field, which the field was to our left. And I think I was the middle receiver. Yo Murphy was the one that was supposed to get the ball. And I'm sure Ray was the wideout. So the wideout runs like a hitch to keep the corner. And we do an inside rub play. Because they're going to be man at the 5, right? They're not going to play zone inside the 10. And I'm supposed to rub for Yo's guy, create confusion, and Yo will run like a quick 5-yard out. And we hit him, and hopefully game's over. Well, Gerald Vaughn was covering me, and Kenton Leonard was covering Yo. And when I ran at Kenton Leonard, Gerald Vaughn banjoed it in and out. So he had communicated to Kenton Leonard, like, you got Flutie, I'll pick up Murphy on the out. but Kenton Leonard stuck with Yo Murphy. So they both ran with Yo for the out. Now I'm supposed to rob, and then after I rob, if that's not open, I'm supposed to go high to the corner, right? We got the hitch outside to hold the corner, so if I go high, I should be wide open. But when I came off of that rub, both defensive backs went with Yo, and I'm feeling like I'm wide open, but you never know does the quarterback see the same thing I think? And I'm just like, well, I'm going to turn around because I feel like I'm open. And as I turn around, the ball's already in the air. So Danny was thinking the exact same thing I was, like, oh, they both went with Yo, I'm going to fire it to Darren. And as I turned, the ball just hit me really hard on the chest. And I, like self-defense, I just caught it. And no time left, and that was the game. So
at the four-yard line, 4 yards separating McManus and the Lions from a trip to the Grey Cup. Doesn't get better than this. McManus, end zone. Touchdown, Lions! BC's going to the Grey Cup! Heartbreak 2 years in a row at McMahon Stadium. And Dave Ritchie has the biggest of upsets.
94, that game kind of, that was the game that I really came out and I kind of established myself as like a good player on my own terms, right? I was no longer just Doug's younger brother playing in the CFL. But yeah, that was a big moment in my career.
It was a big moment in the CFL because the Stampeders once again had lost in a West final.
Yeah, it's funny. I'll see video of that drive and that touchdown, and the announcers talk more about Calgary losing again in the Western final than they do about us beating them. I mean, there's so many little stories leading up to that game. I mean, my wife had gone home because we were expecting our first child, our daughter Taylor, at any day. Like, it could have happened that day or the day before. I did an interview with Doug for ESPN2, and the guy that interviewed us was Mike Mihalik, Boston College guy. So he wanted to have fun with it. Like, let's run routes, and Doug throws it, and you run. Mihalik was a defensive back at Boston College. He's like, I'll cover you. You run routes. This would be really fun. But for some reason, I was just not into any of that fooling around. Like, this is a little bit of a backstory and it sounds very petty at this point, but I know Doug and Sapungis and a lot of players with Calgary had already purchased their Grey Cup tickets in Vancouver. They had reserved hotel reservations for their family. They had gotten like all their tickets for the people they wanted to come to. So they just knew they were going to roll over BC. They had beaten us in the last regular season game. So they were really overlooking at us at that point. But we had always played them tough. So we were confident. In that interview, I just kind of they had tried to make it lighthearted and for Doug and I to kind of like fool around and, you know, the brother thing. And I just gave one word answers like, yes. And he kept baiting me to say more things. I'm like, no. And I just kind of took off my mic. I'm like, are we done? And I just walked away. It was just, you know, you don't always get in that, what would you call it, in that zone. I was like so focused and I wanted to play so well in that game because I knew so much was riding on it. Boy, I think we all approached it. All our teammates for that BC Lions team. And it's strange timing, right? Because our coach, Dave Ritchie, has just passed away recently. Coach Ritchie was our coach that season. And how he managed all of those personalities, I have no idea.
You go against Baltimore in the Grey Cup. And again, you're not really favored because it's an All-American team against you. How did it feel to be playing for the Canadian team against the American franchise?
Well, you get caught up, right? By that time, it's my third year, 91, 92, my fourth year in the CFL. So I'm starting to really love Canada and I love my teammates and some of my best friends on that team are Canadian guys. So you're caught up in the spirit of being a Canadian team. And I mean, that's a storyline. We were a Canadian team playing a team from the States and Baltimore was really good. I mean, Drummond at running back, I think they had Tracy Ham, Armstrong, their secondary was tough, very tough. Carl Anthony and Ken Watson, kind of who I was going against. And of course, I had two or three straight very good games in the playoffs. So I did get a lot of double teams that game. I mean, they played hard, and it was just one of those defensive games where the score was low. I think we had a big fake field goal, actually, where I pulled it down and picked up maybe 20, 30 yards, and we ended up getting a touchdown on that instead of a field goal.
The defensive line, and it was evident right there what that will do for your defense.
7:16 remaining in the third quarter. It's a fake. Darren Flutie has lots of room.
And that allowed us late in the game for Lou's field goal to be the game winner. So the electricity in BC Play Stadium for that Grey Cup, I've been to a lot of Grey Cups, either say with CBC or just watching it or playing in it. And I've never felt that electricity. Like, the stadium was shaking. You could feel it vibrate. You could feel the emotion of a lot of the Canadian players. You know, there was a lot of tears as the Canadian anthem played before the game. So it was a very emotional game. That was just if you think about those three playoff games, the Edmonton game, last second, Calgary game, crazy last second, and then the Grey Cup against Baltimore, Lou kicks the game-winning field goal with no times. And then 2 days later, I think it was 2 days later, my daughter was born. So 94 was a very good year.
Obviously.
Yeah, pretty cool. Nice run.
For listening to our show, Third Down Gamble is hosted on Podbean and can be found on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Follow us on Twitter at Third Down Gamble. Join us again, the Third Down Gamble podcast, audio worth watching.
Third Down Gamble uses the expert resources provided by Canadian Football League player and game statistics, for analytics, game notes, and statistics, and 3downnation.com for news, insight, and in-depth analysis. Please visit cfl.ca and 3downnation.com for the most up-to-date information on the Canadian Football League.